I'm Tom Hall. This is Midday. Today, my guest is Ben Jealous. The former president of the NAACP is the Democratic nominee for governor. He's proposing a drug affordability oversight board and universal health care, debt-free college, raising the wages of K-12 teachers across the state, a small business bill of rights, and dramatic reductions in the population of Maryland prisons. His opponent, incumbent Governor Larry Hogan, calls him a socialist and a tax-and-spend liberal. His advocates point to him as part of a national wave of progressive Democrats who are finding their moment in the age of Donald Trump. Ben Jealous joins me in Studio A as our series of conversations with the candidates continues when Midday starts right after the news. Good afternoon and welcome. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. Thanks for hanging out with us. Today on our program, we continue our series of conversations with the candidates. My guest is Ben Jealous. He is the Democratic nominee for governor. He was one of nine Democrats on the ballot in the primary last June, and he beat the crowded field handily with 40% of the vote, defying pollsters and pundits, many of whom had predicted a win by Prince George's County Executive Rashurn Baker. He bested Mr. Baker by nearly 10 points. Ben Jealous and his running mate Susan Turnbull are now challenging Republican Governor Larry Hogan and Lieutenant Governor Boyd Rutherford. Election day is 7 weeks from today. Early voting begins in just 37 days on October 25th. Ben Jealous is perhaps best known as the former president and CEO of the NAACP. When he was appointed to that position in 2008, he was, at 35 years old, the youngest person ever to lead the venerable civil rights organization. In 2013, he joined Caper Capital, a socially conscious investment firm. He manages the firm's Baltimore office. He's also a visiting professor at the Woodrow Wilson School of Public and International Affairs at Princeton University. He is 45 years old and the father of two children. He lives in Anne Arundel County. We will take your calls and your comments for Ben Jealous a little bit later in the program. In the meantime, we are live streaming on the WIPR Facebook page, so you can post a comment there if you'd like. Mr. Jealous, it's always a pleasure, sir.
Always good to be here, Tom. Thank you for having me.
So let's start right in with an issue that is central to your campaign, and that is Medicare for All.
Yeah.
As a general rule, there are two things that people have to take into consideration with this. One is the need to cover as many people as possible, and the other is how much it costs.
Well, and the third is to get the costs under control. Mm-hmm. Because on this governor's watch, healthcare costs, just in Obamacare, have surged 120% in 4 years. And those of us in the traditional insurance market, Blue Cross with Shield, CareFirst, et cetera, have seen our healthcare costs surge as well.
Yesterday, the Insurance Commission met with Kaiser Permanente and Blue Cross Blue Shield to discuss a proposal to reduce rates by some 23% for one and 8% or so for the other. This is part of a deal worked out with the legislature and the governor in the last session to fix some of the problems with Obamacare. Your feelings about that?
Healthcare costs have surged under this governor 120%, talking about an 8% or a 20% reduction after they're up 120% is literally too little too late. The governor, by the way, could have pushed for this at any point during his term. It's one of a series of kind of election year, oops, I haven't been managing things well. Let me see if I can act like I know how to manage things. But the bottom line is that healthcare costs on his watch up 120% benchmark premium for Obamacare the last 4 years. I know for me, I paid a steep price because of it. I was seeking to move a factory from northern Canada to South Baltimore, East Reed Bird Street. Would have ultimately brought 300 good jobs with healthcare, low-skill jobs to a block, most of which is a public housing project. And we could have trained all the public, any of the public housing residents who are able-bodied for those jobs. And the deal fell apart because under Larry Hogan, healthcare costs keep surging. The entrepreneur, the last minute, asked me a very simple question. He said, do you expect healthcare costs and the Maryland Health Exchange, Obamacare, to go up again next year? I said, probably. He said, well, Ben, then I can't do it because I can afford the current cost structure, but not the next one. Sure enough, that year they leapt 50%. So nice to see that things may trend down a bit, but they're up so much. I don't know you know, that it does much good. I mean, I've met with Marylanders. Most recently, I met with a woman who's been bankrupted 3 times by high healthcare costs in our state. I've met with a man whose girlfriend, a 52-year-old psychologist, world-renowned in her field, had a gap in her employment, ended up rationing her anti-seizure medication and died. Her father, who's a doctor, read her birth certificate to him and said, yeah, that's right, it's asphyxiation from an epileptic seizure, but let's be honest, she's no longer with us because she couldn't afford her health care. So we have a real crisis in Maryland, and we need to fix it.
And your proposal to fix it is so-called Medicare for All.
Sure.
There are those who would place the increases in the cost of Obamacare at a couple of different feats. Yeah. You're placing it at the feet of Mr. Hogan. There are those who place it at the feet of Mr. Obama in that the way the plan is structured, he sort of made a trade-off between covering as many people as possible, not going to a single-payer system, and allowing the private insurance markets to be part of it. And because of that, variations in prices have happened, you know, since the beginning of the plan. Of course, the third part is Mr. Trump, who and the Republican controlled Congress and Senate, who have been doing their darndest to sort of nip away at it and chip away at it, having promised to repeal it completely for a long time.
And then there's our governor, who tried to cut $200 million from Medicaid, also tried to shorten the enrollment period for Obamacare, and generally has done nothing to stand up to Donald Trump on these attacks on our healthcare.
So explain how a Medicare for All proposal would work and why that is the best way to address the cost problem of healthcare.
Last week, President Obama came out and said that Medicare for All was a good idea. And I think all of us who are involved in fighting with the GOP back then and pushing through Obamacare so we got some relief knew that Obamacare was just one more step in the right direction. Until we get to that place where every other Western nation is, where we cover all of our people, we'll still have to keep pushing. In our country, we have two big healthcare systems. We have the corporate healthcare system. Obamacare is ultimately a part of that in the ways that you mentioned, where the healthcare costs keep surging. And we have Medicare for All, we have Medicare, where the costs are much more stable, despite the fact that it's Medicare currently is only for the most expensive population to insure, Americans over 65 years old. What we're proposing is that if you take, you build a system like Medicare, you expand it to everybody, it actually is even more efficient. And so we put a proposal on the table that really is inspired by Maryland's tradition of being right on the cutting edge of healthcare affordability. We took the biggest step that any state has ever taken towards Medicare for All 40 years ago or so when we passed all payer. And it's saved us, since Martin O'Malley expanded it, about $500 million. And will save us another $1 billion, they say, over the next 5 years.
And explain to folks what all payer means and this so-called Medicare or the waiver that we have been granted since the 1970s from the federal government.
What that waiver says is that, you boil it right down, is that it allows us to require every hospital in Maryland to only charge one rate for each procedure. In every other state, the same hospital can charge different insurance companies and even different insurance plans at the same company different rates for the same procedure. And it results in a bunch of overcharging. So in Maryland, we've said, whatever it costs to fix a broken leg at your hospital is what you're going to charge every insurer. It's a prerequisite to single payer, because at the end of the day, single payer means you have one insurance plan, like Medicare, for everybody. So you've got to get to a place where there's only one rate.
So just so folks understand, so this means that Blue Cross Blue Shield, Kaiser Permanente, Medicare, Medicaid, everybody.
Care First.
They're
all charged the same rate.
Is the same rate. So there's no, as it were, competition for rate, volatility or anything
And it saves a lot of money. It's one of the harder things you have to do to put a Medicare for All system in place, and we've already done it.
So then take us through the next step then. Why is that the best platform, the best launching point?
Because you have to leverage your entire state's population to get a better deal. Yesterday, I put a plan on the table around pharmaceuticals. We have a massive crisis in Maryland. My grandma, 101-year-old retired Maryland social worker, called me 2 months ago and said, baby, they're about to take away my pharmaceutical drug coverage. Every Maryland state employee retiree right now, 80,000 of them, like my grandma, are going to be losing their prescription drug coverage come the first of the year. And there's a temporary stopgap that would allow reimbursement, but they're still going to have to pay out of pocket and then at some point in the future get reimbursed, which a lot of people just don't have that cash flow. My grandma lives on a fixed income, for example. And so in order to fix that, we've got to fix the bigger crisis with our pharmaceuticals, which is that we're being overcharged, not on some drugs, but pretty much on every drug. So I put a plan on the table, which would be to pass legislation that would allow Marylanders to buy pharmaceuticals re-imported from Canada, essentially leveraging the population of Canada to get a better deal. What Medicare for All allows you to do is to leverage the entire population of your state to get a better deal on health care, to make the management of the system more efficient, and to save money on pharmaceuticals. And we have to do it. As Americans, we pay more and get less than the people of any other Western nation. And it's because of our corporate system that is just, at the end of the day, has turned us, Americans, as only 5% of the world people, into 63% of Big Pharma's profits, and made our healthcare system the number one cause of bankruptcy in Maryland, number one cause of personal bankruptcy, and get this, our healthcare system, a top five cause of untimely death.
So explain how it can work in Maryland under your plan, in contrast to some of the places where it has not worked. Vermont passed a similar proposal in 2011. By 2014, they gave up and said it was too expensive. Colorado, Minnesota, Montana, New York, Oregon, they've all toyed with this idea and then walked away with it, away from it, because they didn't think...
Away from it. Vermont is the size of Baltimore. That is one very teeny tiny state that tried and decided that they couldn't afford it. The other states, this is a legislative battle. Like so many other legislative battles, it takes multiple cycles. That's just the way that our democracy works. And the movement in New York and California.
Do you think they're headed there?
No, totally. Look, reports keep coming out saying that this is the best way to fix it. Very centrist think tanks like the RAND Corporation have said again and again, not only is this the best solution, it's really the only solution. I mean, go back, think about it. 25 years ago, a young Rhodes Scholar running for office named Bill Clinton said, there's only one way to create a sustainable healthcare system that covers all of us. It's just to do what every Western nation does, and that's to, at the end of the day, have a single-payer system, Medicare for All. And it was Winston Churchill who said a long time before that, you can always count on Americans to do the right thing after they've tried every other alternative. Well, darn if we haven't tried every other alternative for 25 years. It's not working. And what we know does work is Medicare. Medicare, get this, Blue Cross Blue Shield, the overhead's 18 or 19%. Medicare, it's 3%. That's 17% more of your healthcare dollar that just got made available to doctors and the cost of actually covering, actually providing you service. It stretches your health dollar much further. And at the same time, Medicare for All would allow us to leverage our entire population's buying power to get a much better deal on pharmaceuticals.
Give us a sense of the time frame you think that this might take. I mean, as you say, the legislative process can be a pretty messy affair. You've talked about establishing a commission to make sure it can happen. What's that? How does it walk this through?
Sure.
How it might work.
My campaign's been endorsed by Elizabeth Warren, Bernie Sanders, Kamala Harris, Cory Booker. All of them have also endorsed a proposal in the U.S. Senate to create a Medicare for All system for the country as a whole. Now again, President Obama's also endorsed the idea. And the proposal that we have for Maryland is based on that proposal in the U.S. Senate. It starts with 2 years of stakeholders coming together in a commission, having strategic conversation and designing a system for the state. Doctors, nurses, hospitals, et cetera, and unions, everybody who's involved here, everybody who's a major insurer, major employers, all coming together, sitting around the table and figuring out how we create that system. And then in the third year, actually pushing the legislation through in the beginning of the year, and by the end of the year, preparing to implement it. That's what it's going to take. In the meantime, we've also put a proposal on the table to make it easier for people to enroll in Obamacare, get more people into the system, start bringing the cost down. One of the ways that Larry Hogan has destabilized Obamacare is he's has not expanded the enrollment period. In fact, he sought to constrain it. He sought to constrain it. He also sought to cut about $200 million out of Medicaid. And so as governor, I'll do quite the opposite. Big supporter of Medicaid, big supporter of Medicare, big supporter of Obamacare, helped to pass it as president of the NAACP, put together a war room to bring in advocates from all over the country, small business people from all over the country to help push Obamacare through. And as governor, I'll make sure that we expand the enrollment period, we get as many people into it as possible. That also, frankly, that will help stabilize Obamacare. It'll help keep the costs under control. It'll also make it easier, ultimately, to move to a Medicare for All system.
Ben Jealous is the Democratic nominee for governor. He's the former president and CEO of the NAACP. He also runs the Baltimore office of Caper Capital. It's a venture capital firm. If you have questions for Mr. Jealous, you'll have a chance to ask them when we come back from a break. 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wypr.org. Our Twitter handle, @MiddayWYPR. We are also streaming on the WYPR Facebook page. By the way, before we take a break, a brief word about news from the world of the arts. The Maryland Film Festival has announced that Jed Dietz, who founded the festival 20 years ago, will retire in November as its director. Sandra Gibson will become the interim director when the Film Festival Board conducts a national search, or while they conduct that search, rather. Jed has, of course, been a fixture on our show for more than 10 years, both here at Midday and before that on the morning show. In a couple of weeks, he will be joining me and film critic Ann Hornaday for our regular feature Midday at the Movies, and we'll have a chance to talk to him more about his decision and the direction of the festival going forward. In the meantime, we wish Jed and the festival all the best. I'm Tom Hall. We're back in a flash. Stay with us. Welcome back. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. By the way, coming up tomorrow on the program, another in our series of conversations with the candidates, Al Redmer joins me in Studio A. He is the Republican nominee for Baltimore County Executive. If you're just joining us today, my guest is Ben Jealous. He's the Democratic nominee for governor. He's the former president and CEO of the NAACP and a former investor with Caper Capital, a socially conscious investment firm. You are welcome to be part of our conversation with Ben Jealous at 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wypr.org. To drop us a tweet, it's @MiddayWYPR. To follow me on Twitter, it's @TomHallWYPR. And you can catch us on the WYPR Facebook page where we are streaming. Mr. Jealous, we do have a comment from a Facebook watcher who says, let's end the debate regarding socialist or not. It's not a bad word. It's just misunderstood. Would you please speak to what it means to you? There was an ad that the Hogan campaign didn't complain about from the Republican Governors Association. Oh. They spent about $2 million.
Yes. That's part of the Hogan campaign. Yes.
Yes. And in which they edited a remark you made on a cable news program in which you said, oh, sure, go ahead and call me a socialist. And they edited
out. Of course,
out
the other half was that it doesn't change the fact that I'm actually a venture capitalist. You know, they cut it in half. We actually made a complaint to the FCC because it was a gross misrepresentation and therefore a violation of FCC codes to use somebody's words in that way. I'm an FDR Democrat. I remember sitting with Bernie in 2016, and we were having dinner, and I said, you know, Bernie, what are you going to do when Donald Trump starts calling you a communist? You know, they called Obama a socialist, called Clinton a socialist, they called MLK a communist, they called FDR a communist. I said, Trump's already calling you a communist. What are you going to do when you guys are debating? This is us, you know, hopeful at the time that you might make it through. And he said, you know, I haven't thought of it. I said, well, why don't you just tell them that we're FDR Democrats? And he said, yeah, that sounds pretty good to me. Our party, Democratic Party, is the party of working people. It means you have to stand up for working people, the right to be paid a fair wage, to be treated with dignity, to have health care for the kids, to be able to have a great education, pursue their dreams, and ultimately retire with dignity and not have fear your life will turn into a nightmare. And the politics of this campaign very much flow from my grandmother, Mamie Todd, who's a 101-year-old retired Maryland social worker who helped train a young Barbara Mikulski. And when you would walk into my grandma's house over in Ashburton in West Baltimore, there was a picture of Jesus, there was a picture of the bishop, and there was a picture of FDR. And then there were Life and Time magazine covers, Life and Ebony magazine covers, JFK assassinated, RFK assassinated, MLK assassinated, Barbara Jordan, Shirley Chisholm, and also a photo of her and Barbara Mikulski, social workers. And my grandmother's taught me were two things. One, baby, don't try to half solve a problem because then you still got a problem. So in this campaign, Medicare for All, raising the minimum wage, putting our government really squarely on the side of our small business people, small business owners, Bill of Rights, benchmarking regulations and incentives to make sure we're the best place to grow a business because it's our entrepreneurs in Maryland who really do grow our economy. In each case, what we sought to do is to put a whole solution to a whole problem because people deserve real solutions to their problems in real time. And in the process, to revive the politics of FDR and JFK and RFK and MLK and Barbara Mikulski and Barbara Jordan, would say in short, yes, we must be the party that seeks to expand opportunity for everybody. Yes, we must be the party that stands up for civil rights. And yes, we must be the party that is focused urgently on ending poverty in our midst. And I believe, as somebody who grows small businesses, that when you expand our economy at its base, it's good for all of us. Trickle-down economics has failed. Bottom-up economics has always worked. I believe, while Henry Ford had a lot of issues, when it came to the issue of paying workers, I believe he was right. When you pay your workers enough to buy the car they're building, we all do better. Fundamentally, that's what this campaign is about. I'm not really interested in sectarian conversations, but do I believe that if we all do better, we all will do better? Absolutely.
There are those who say that you are part of a progressive wave going across the country nationally. You just appeared at an event, Congressional Black Caucus, yeah, with two other African-American candidates for governors of Georgia and Florida.
Yeah, all of us running south of the Mason-Dixon. That's
south of the Mason-Dixon. Yeah. We have a comment from another listener. Cindy on Facebook says, how will you appeal to the more moderate Democrats in the next few weeks? Don't you feel it's necessary in order to nab the moderate votes from Governor Hogan? I mean, this is there a tension between the progressive wing of the Democratic Party and the more centrist wing?
Oh, we're Democrats. You know, we argue all the time. I, with that said, you know, we're a family, and at the end of the day, we pull together as a family. My biggest focus on this, you know, I said from the beginning, I'm not running to the left, I'm not running to the right, I'm running towards the people. And in our democracy, too few of the people vote. And so what I'm focused on is giving Democrats, giving like-minded independents, giving Republicans who know their party's lost its way, a reason to vote. And so you'll hear me really focus on the kitchen table issues of finally fully funding our schools, making sure that we keep the broken promise on the casino money, budgeting education first in our budget, finally ensuring our teachers are respected and paid better, and every kid gets, you know, is able to get a good education at their local school. Finally, ending the discrimination that is having children's educational options determined by their zip code. My mom sued Western High School for Girls when she was 12 to desegregate it when she was 15. And as governor, I'm committed to helping to finish the work that she and so many young people in Maryland started a long time ago. And that's this pernicious problem of zip codes determining the quality of grade school education. Focused on healthcare, as we've discussed, focused on opening up our economy, getting it going again. And what you find is that the biggest issue in 2014 was that 200,000 Democrats, give or take, 175,000, who had voted in 2010 didn't show up in 2014. When you look at those polls, what you see is that the people who didn't show up felt like they'd been betrayed in the economy. And so Yes, there are moderate Democrats who are getting to know me, realize I am a venture capitalist, I am an investor, I am a business person, I know how to grow businesses, and that's important to them because a lot of them are involved in growing businesses too, and they know that we're dead last in the region in income growth, we're dead last in job growth, and yes, we need a governor who, like me, actually understands how to grow companies in a 21st century economy. And yet our biggest focus is knocking on doors. We had 120 volunteers this weekend in Baltimore knock on more than 6,000 doors. That's just one of 15 offices across the state. We're about to open a 16th office, which will be our third office in Baltimore City. And in that case, they're out there talking about education, healthcare, getting the economy going again, standing up to Donald Trump, to the base of Democratic voters who determine our elections by whether or not they show up.
I want to get to some calls. We got a bunch of them, as you can imagine. My guest is Ben Jealous. He is the Democratic nominee for governor. It's midday. I'm Tom Hall. Brenda in Sykesville, welcome to the program. What's your quick question for Mr. Jealous?
Hi, Mr. Jealous. First of all, I'm a supporter of yours, and I've been out campaigning for you.
Thank you.
But I had a question regarding the Medicare issue,
yep,
because I'm on Medicare.
Yep.
I was born with cystic fibrosis,
yep,
et cetera, but, so I have a lot of problems, medical problems, but I'm a survivor. But in the meantime, and I've met you and, mm-hmm, and Bernie, but I wanted to find out, why can't we have a one-payer system that's graduated by the amount of money, the income that you have?
Well, that's essentially how it would work. And thank you. That's a great question. We put a number of options on the table for the commission to discuss how it will be paid for. It's, I think, most likely is that it'll be paid for by people paying a portion of their income, business paying a portion of their profits, and so the more you make, essentially, the more you'll pay in. It is a progressive system in that respect. That's essentially the way that it would work.
Goucher College, the Sarah Hughes Center for Politics up at Goucher, released a poll today. They're going to release another one tomorrow. 56% of Marylanders think taxes are too high. Probably no big surprise. There's also a clear majority of people who favor Medicare for All. They favor a $15 minimum wage. They favor,
sure,
debt-free college, things that you've made as centerpieces of your campaign. But they also favor Governor Hogan in terms of his approval at 66%. How do you talk to the person? We had this question about,
yeah,
the moderates in the party and the centrists, the independents. How do you talk to the person who says, look, don't broke what ain't fixed. Things are going fine. Let's not upset the apple cart. Is this election in 2018 for the governorship of Maryland, is this a change election the way clearly it was on the national level in 2016 and other elections before Obama in 2008?
I've had folks say to me, he's popular, he ain't that bad. Question is, what has he done with that popularity? And what do you mean by ain't that bad? Our schools have fallen every year he's been in office, fallen in the rankings. We were 5 years first in the country. Now we're number sixth. Our healthcare costs have surged. Economy is stuck. If we had the job growth of Virginia, we would have 50,000 more jobs right now. And the funny thing is that Virginia's job growth is lower than the national average. If we had the income growth of Virginia, we'd have $8,000 more in our pocket. The income growth of Delaware, we have $15,000 more in our pocket. But we're in Maryland under Larry Hogan, and our economy is stuck. Everything that we're proposing in this is designed to get our economy going again. On healthcare, I'm a small business person. All I care at the end of the day is I get a better deal. It's not about whether I pay a check to a corporation or pay a check to the government. I'm agnostic. Is the price going to keep going up? And if it is, under the current system, is there a better way to do it? And what we're saying is, yeah, there's a better way. Larry Hogan will play games. He'll say, that's taxes. Honestly, Mr. Hogan, who cares? The question is, will we get a better deal or not? If you're paying a big check to a corporation, but you can write a smaller check to the government, as a small business person, as a person on a fixed income, of course you would rather write the smaller check than the bigger check, and that's what we're talking about. How do we get you a better deal in your health care? How do we manage things better? Mr. Hogan's mismanagement of our state government is palpable. I mean, young people freezing in the winter. We know we got to replace the HVAC systems. We know it's multiple counties. We know there's a role for the state. And then we come to the fall, and they're broiling in their classrooms, and we find out, wait, nothing was fixed. So fundamentally, I'm a small business person that grows small businesses, and I'm focused on getting a better deal for all of us, taking our education system, making it the fattest pipeline of talent into every industry in the state. We have shortages of teachers and first responders and building trades and programmers and nurses and construction managers. We could be doing so much better. And so I put a plan on the table to make sure every child comes out ready for a career, not just for college. Every child shows up to kindergarten ready to learn. Every child's taught coding.
And the thing that makes some people nervous about that is that these are expensive programs.
But,
and they're saying, you know, if so many people, and I'm sure it's probably the case in every state in the country, who likes taxes? But people do have a notion that, you know, a Ben Jealous administration is going to mean higher taxes. How do you respond to that?
Well, first of all, I put the biggest tax cut on the table between the two of us. Mr. Hogan has never proposed to reduce the sales tax. He's never even proposed something as significant as reducing the sales tax. And yet I put it on the table. As part of
a reduction of 0.25, right?
Yeah, mm-hmm. To put us in line with DC so that we can stop losing retailers and get back to growing jobs here. And did that as part of an effort to make our tax system more fair. It's not fair that my small business pays taxes and Walmart doesn't in Maryland. And so we would close that loophole. It's not fair that that we're all paying a higher sales tax in part to subsidize the cost of hedge fund managers paying a lower effective tax rate than their secretaries. So I put a plan on the table to close both of those.
And that's doable on the state level. Obviously, closing the interest loophole national level was, you know, debated and then decided.
Well, I mean, look who's in Congress and look who the president is. But you know, fundamentally, Mr. Hogan has, you know, misrepresented my positions, but he also has shown that there's a cost to everything, including doing nothing. And that cost is that we keep slipping in the rate, you know, in the ratings, our healthcare costs keep surging. As a business person, one thing you know is you don't always have to pay more to do better. Sometimes you just have to do better to do better. The biggest revenue change I put on the table is to end mass incarceration and save $660 million a year. Why? Because I've helped other states like Georgia and Texas in a bipartisan way put through common sense criminal justice reforms that interrupt the vicious cycle of mass incarceration and have had them shrinking their prison systems in a way that's sustainable and that ultimately saves money. And it's, you know, Mr. Hogan, on the other hand, has championed a return to the failed strategies of the war on drugs, introducing new mandatory minimums that are outrageously expensive and don't work. And so a lot of this time is really about whether it's about creating a single-payer healthcare system in which we can leverage all of our buying power, get a better deal, and ultimately have to write a smaller check, whoever it goes to, or whether it's about passing smart and safe criminal justice policies that ultimately end the scourge of mass incarceration, save us $660 million a year, or whether it's about taxing, legalizing, and regulating cannabis for adult use, which would generate almost $400 million a year in taxes, but also make our streets much safer.
We'll talk about some of those revenue streams when we come back from a break. Ben Jealous is the Democratic nominee for governor of Maryland. His running mate is Susan Turnbull, the former chair of the Maryland Democratic Party. She was here with me in Studio A last Wednesday, and I spoke last month with Lieutenant Governor Boyd Rutherford. All of our conversations with the candidates are available on our website, wypr.org/midday. Or by subscribing to our podcast. We have, of course, invited Governor Larry Hogan to appear again on Midday. He has appeared on our show once in February of this year. We have not yet received a response to our requests from the Hogan campaign. Ben Jealous and Larry Hogan will appear in one televised debate next Monday night, September 24th. But Ben Jealous will stay here in Studio A with me for our final segment when we come back from a break. And you are welcome to join our conversation, 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wypr.org. Our Twitter handle, @MiddayWYPR. And we are streaming on the WYPR Facebook page. I'm Tom Hall. Stay with us. Welcome back. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. If you've just joined us, Ben Jealous is here. He is the Democratic nominee for governor of Maryland. He's the former president and CEO of the NAACP. He is the Baltimore-based partner of a socially conscious investment firm, and he's a visiting professor at Princeton's Woodrow Wilson School of Public and International Affairs. You still doing that? Are you still at Princeton? I mean, I know you were. That may be outdated information. Is that still true?
Yeah, no. I still teach. I'll start Monday nights again, the Monday after Election Day for the remainder of this semester. I promise my students that once I win this election, I'll come back and teach them a course on how you win.
In the meantime, they're just, you know, hurling spitballs at a sub, right? Is that how that works up at Princeton? All right, if you have questions for Ben Jealous, 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wypr.org. Our Twitter handle, @MiddayWYPR. And we are streaming on the WYPR Facebook page. We got a lot of calls when your running mate, Susie Turnbull, was here last week.
Yep.
From Democrats, and I've talked to folks, you know, voters who are not active in the party, as well as even some elected officials. They're scared. They're scared about the fact that the Hogan campaign has $8.5 million
sure.
and the Jealous campaign has $386,000.
Well, we've never been here in Maryland politics. I mean, we looked back 60 years. We couldn't find a campaign in this situation. I'll explain. And then we stopped looking after 60 years. So maybe 90 years ago, some historian, please write in, let us know. There was a similar election. But in 60 years, we cannot find a Democrat who had to come through a crowded primary to take on an incumbent. Glenn Denning did the first part. O'Malley did the second part. Remember, Doug Duncan dropped out, so he didn't have a primary. And so we've never seen one of our own have to spend every dollar to get through a primary and then have to raise up over the summer and the fall to compete.
Do you have enough to, because people tend to look at, I mean, we're talking about issues here. We're talking about Medicare. We're talking about prison reform. We're talking about things, you know, perhaps legalizing marijuana, et cetera. But people tend to look at political campaigns, at least on a certain level, in terms of the ads. And yeah. there have been ads after ad after ad pummeling.
We have enough for.
And there are people who say he's not responding.
We have enough to run our game. Larry Hogan's running a different game. Republicans in Maryland win by voters not showing up, literally not. When we have a low turnout, Republicans win. Democrats win by turning out voters. The only legal way to suppress the vote is to run negative ads. We said if Larry Hogan ran negative ads before Labor Day, it meant he was scared. He started running them before the 4th of July. He's very scared. And that's his one hope and prayer, is that he can disgust enough people from voting by running negative ad after negative ad that maybe hopefully folks won't, you know, you'll see a big drop off in Democrats again versus 2010 like we did in 2014. I don't think that's going to happen this year. We have enough money to run our campaign. What is our campaign? We have 50 organizers on the ground. We've opened up 15, soon to be 16, soon to be 17, soon to be 18 offices. We're hiring more organizers every week. We're running the same playbook we did in 2010 when we turned out more than 1 million voters and we had 100 organizers on the ground by Election Day. In 2014, our party had 10 on the ground. And so this is a people-powered campaign, a positive campaign. Our ads went up in Baltimore Monday, and they are, you know, reflective of our campaign, extremely positive, with a vision. What is Larry Hogan's vision? He still hasn't told us, but I'm very clear. We have a vision to fully fund our schools, to make sure everybody has health care, and to get our economy going again, and to truly stand up to Donald Trump, somebody who Larry Hogan has quietly aided and abetted many, many times.
Crowded primary field, no doubt about it. Nine people, you garnered 232,000 votes. You need to quintuple that to get to this magic $1 million.
Understand this, right? I had eight
total.
Opponents, and I got more votes than Larry Hogan did, who had none.
Yeah,
think about that for a second.
But you are confident that you have the whatever resources you have will be directed towards that rather than television campaigns
yeah.
or yard signs or bumper stickers.
Politics is always a contest between organized money and organized people. WAMU, one of your sister stations, I put it pretty well the other day. They said Larry Hogan has the polls, Jealous has the numbers. Let's see who wins. Well, you know what? Money and polls don't vote. And if there's a year that's proven that, it's 2018. I was standing on stage with Stacey Abrams and Andrew Gillum. Andrew and I were laughing about the power of fourth. Both of us started off our race in fourth place, and both of us won handily. Popular pollster said I was going to lose by 7 points. I won by 10 points. Why? because we built a bigger ground game than anybody else, and we put out a positive vision for how the people of Maryland can move forward. I know we're all tired in these times of divide and conquer where we're terrorized by Donald Trump's Twitter stream. There's an alternative. There's always been an alternative, which is unite and prosper. You pull people together across every line they say, as opposed to divide us into bigger coalitions than folks are used to seeing. And that's what I've specialized in. I mean, as you know, Tom, I was named Marylander of the Year by the Baltimore Sun 5 years ago because in 1 year I led the successful effort to abolish the death penalty while co-chairing the successful effort to pass the DREAM Act, while helping pass marriage equality and helping pass sensible gun safety reform and helping expand our voting rights protections. And at the start of that year, most of those battles they told us would be impossible. We won all of them. Same way that we won the primary, the same way that we will win this campaign.
Let's go back to the issues. Question from somebody on Facebook. How will you revitalize public transportation in Baltimore and our state? This comes from Casey on Facebook.
Pretty much doing the opposite of what Larry Hogan has done and plans to do. You know, Larry Hogan wants rapid transit for the rich. That's what his dreams of high-speed rail that would only have one stop in Maryland, Baltimore. Are about. And, you know, that's what his Lexus lanes he wants to build, where he would privatize our public freeways, you know, are about. We're Democrats, environmentalists, social justice advocates. We understand that at the end of the day, public transportation is about the public. It's about making sure people can get from where they live to where they work, where they study, where they play, safely, reliably, quickly. So what would I do? I would... First of all, fix the bus system. As a young man in McCullough Homes, where my mom grew up, said to me the other day, this governor broke it. And then I went on the bus again and just asked folks, what is your old, 4 years ago, what was your commute? One bus, two bus. What is it now? Two buses, three buses, four buses. How many minutes was it before? 25 minutes. What is it now? 45 minutes, an hour and 20 minutes. And this 8-year-old boy was right. The governor broke the bus system, so we will fix it.
During the primary, you talked about even reviving the red line.
Yes.
The governor made the decision to forego,
$900 million
of federal funding. So we get to the back of the line. Is reviving the red line a real thing?
Of course it's a real thing. It took us 10 years. I mean, my family's been rooted in West Baltimore since 1941. One thing that you learn is you don't give up. That if you are the one who will fight to the end, you will win. And on the issue of massive public transportation projects, sometimes they take 10 years, sometimes they take 20 years. But if you're willing to fight to the end, you'll get it done. Now, let's be clear. We may have to replace the president of the United States, change who the president of these United States is before we can revive the red line. You can sign me up for that, too. But we need the red line. Baltimore County needs the red line. Anne Arundel County needs the red line. I was meeting with folks in the Anne Arundel Chamber. They're upset about Governor Hogan's decision to kill the red line. Yes, we can revive the red line. Yes, we'll have to push. In the meantime, fix the buses, expand bus rapid transit, develop a 21st century transportation plan that really allows us to finally have a vision for a public transportation system for the Baltimore region that works. Our public transportation here for too long has been a series of afterthoughts, things that almost connect but don't. We can do much better, and when I'm governor, we will.
See if we can get in one or two more calls. Tony in Annapolis, welcome to Midday with Ben Jealous.
Thank you. I just, if I could just ask two quick questions.
Yes, ma'am.
First is, I have lived here all 70 years of my life, and I have never seen the infrastructure so bad. What in the current budget is taken away from fixing our roads? Number two question is, how many private prisons do we have in Maryland?
Taking the last question first, we don't have any private prisons in Maryland, and I'll make sure that we won't. We do have private prison industries, and that's really a problem that we have to take head on, too, because they're competing against companies on the outside, printing, furniture making, and making it hard for those industries to grow in Maryland while paying people a wage that approaches slavery. With regards to our roads and our infrastructure, the governor would like to expand highways in ways that will tear down homes, even possibly tear down a hospital, and in the process make every mistake that Los Angeles made in the 70s, because you keep widening your highways, eventually you can't widen them any further, and you just end up with more cars on the roads and more traffic jams. Will lead us in making historic investments in public transportation. We'll start with using the gas tax for what it was intended for. The other thing, you know, is in Prince George's County, they're talking about just how dirty the highways have become under Hogan. We'll certainly make sure that we repair and we fix and we keep clean the roads that we have, but we've got to get cars off the road, and the only way to do that is to start investing in bus rapid transit and expanded rails, expanded MARC, expanded metro, expanded subway systems. That's where we have to head.
MarylandReporter.com had a piece about your estimates for how much we can actually save when we reduce the prison population. And there are those who also, of course, raise the specter that that's a public safety issue if you're releasing people from prison who shouldn't be released. So how do you decide who gets out? How do you decide, how do you come to a conclusion that you can save upwards of $600 million a year by reducing the population of prisons?
We use the state's own estimates for that. But let me be really clear. I've had two family members shot in Maryland in the last 10 years. And when that happens, two emotions course all through your veins. The first is that you don't want that to happen to anybody in your family again. I got to tell you the feeling when it does happen again. It just hits you like a ton of bricks. And then the second is that you don't want that to happen to anybody's family either. And that's part of what's driven me to be so focused on public safety and how we improve it. I will not do anything that will make us less safe. On Governor Hogan's watch, shootings are up 42% in the counties outside of Baltimore. Let me repeat that. In the 23 counties that are not Baltimore City, shootings are up 42% in Maryland. Excuse me, I'm sorry. Murders are up 42% in Maryland. Violent crime is up 10%. Opioid deaths are up 160%. When you add Baltimore City into the mix of murders, of course, it's up even higher statewide. What Governor Hogan's doing has failed us. What I'm talking about is what makes us safer. We have to remember that people cycle in and out of prison. And so you're ultimately dealing with a vicious cycle. You interrupt that in smart ways. We get safer and the prisons get smaller. You make sure that addicts are sent to rehab, not to prison. We get safer, the prisons get smaller. You make sure that inmates behind bars are required to learn to read and to learn a skill that actually translates into a job. We get safer, the prisons get smaller. You remove barriers to employment on the outside when they return home, and you're increasing jobs in the economy. We get safer, the prisons get smaller. Maryland Reporter is a right-wing blog that's funded by, you know, right-wing donors that like to scare people. And quite frankly, ultimately, it's been their failed policies that have made our prison system swell. What I'm suggesting is that we get back to being safe. And that means, you know, that we shift away from failed policies like the war on drugs, failed policies like broken window theory, which says, you know, let's have the police officers focus on small, low-level infractions. And we get back to first things first, policing. My grandfather was on law enforcement for 30 years in Baltimore City. My cousins have been on law enforcement now for over half a century. I have cousins who picked up a gun and a badge and went to work this morning in our state. And they'll tell you, you know, what we need to be doing is focusing more on catching killers, catching rapists, catching those who would invade our homes. When you look at the homicide case close rates, the rape close rates, they're too low. We could do much better. Last time I checked, Maryland had 3,700 unopened rape kits. That's an abomination. And as governor, you can expect me to be impatient about making sure that we all get safer.
That's all the time we have for today. I apologize for not being able to get to all of our calls and emails, but we do appreciate, Ben Jealous, your time this afternoon, and we hope to see you again on the campaign trail.
Appreciate you, Tom. And unlike Governor Hogan, I'm not afraid of WYPR.
Ben Jealous is the Democratic nominee for governor and the former president and CEO of the NAACP. He will be debating Larry Hogan in the one televised debate next Monday night at 7 o'clock. We have, as I mentioned, invited the governor to appear on the program by himself and again with Mr. Jealous, and I haven't heard from him yet, but if we do,
we'd love to have that conversation.
Let you know. Election day is 7 weeks from today. The last day to register for the election is Tuesday, October 16th. Early voting begins in 37 days on October 25th. I'd like to thank Joe Squared for providing lunch today. Joe Squared serves coal-fired pizzas, risotto, and local craft beers. Locations and hours at joesquared.com. Thanks for listening. If you are observing Yom Kippur tonight and tomorrow, Gemar Hatima Tova. I'm Tom Hall. Have a great day.